Please be aware that this podcast has reference to drug and alcohol use and paraphernalia and may not be appropriate for some people in early recovery. Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Mahjubeen Islam.
And I am Dr. Ketley Daniels.
And we want to thank you for listening to our Treat Addiction podcast. The information in this podcast cannot replace your seeking a treatment provider, which you can easily do at SAMHSA's National Helpline at findtreatment.gov or 1-800-622-4357. Now, that said, Ketley, I got to tell you, it's you. You jinxed this episode, which is coming so late.
You know, I don't know if I should take the whole credit for it.
But or the blame.
Credit sounds more positive. I'll take credit. Because I think there was always another reason why we should present some other subject. But I think this is just the right time. Yes. And like ketamine, we're going to divide this subject into two episodes. This one will describe the properties and effects of the THC. And the next one will focus on the psychiatric effects of marijuana.
Okay, I'll take that.
Okay.
So cannabis is the fourth most commonly used psychoactive substance worldwide, after alcohol, caffeine, and tobacco. It's euphorogenic or a high sedative and analgesic properties, which is pain treatment, are primarily due to one cannabinoid. So this is a bit of a tongue twister. Delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, abbreviated to THC. So THC concentration, this is an important thing to kind of like know, is commonly used as a measure of cannabis potency.
And believe it or not, and I think most people will agree that they know somebody who's using it, lots of people are using cannabis.
That's for sure.
And in my office, sometimes I promise you, it feels like Charlie Brown, Linus. You know, he comes in, and when they leave, I have this haze of you know,
the aroma
lingering in my office. And anybody and everybody is dabbling into it, your neighbor, you know, the doctor, literally, and your teacher, whomever. Over 228 million people worldwide, the last survey that was taken in 2022, are using cannabis.
Mm-hmm. Half of the U.S. population over age 12 has used marijuana in the previous year. So if the U.S. population is over 333 million, can you imagine?
That's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people. So before we move on, I think we need to clear the confusion between cannabis and marijuana, for we will be using them fairly interchangeably.
So the cannabis is from the cannabis sativa plant. The marijuana part refers to a component of that plant that contains substantial amounts of THC, which is different, I should insert here, from CBD, which is the second most prevalent active ingredient in cannabis. So this is what we're going to be talking about.
So how is marijuana used?
You know, my mind just went back to high school days when taking the subway in New York, people were always selling joints, you know, in the subway selling.
Right.
And they also sold nickel bags. I mean, that dates me, I know, nickel bags on the subway. But anyway, most commonly used form is as the joint. They just roll it up into these little tiny little things that look so interesting. Or they'll roll it up as a blunt, which is a combination of tobacco with the marijuana. More popular now, especially in the young adults and in the youth, is the vaping. It's such a cool thing that they're doing these days. And the edibles. The edibles are more, at least in my office, what I see with the edibles, it's more popular with the older individuals, those with physical health issues. They're more into using the edibles. They use it for pain. They use it for sleep. And then there's the topical and transmucosal, like inside the mouth products, but not as often as the others. That's
right.
How it's used. Yeah.
And it's really kind of funny that we treat patients in addiction medicine, but you have to learn the street names or the street lingo, so to speak. And they'll come and they'll say, I do a bowl.
Yeah.
So the blunt I knew, but the bowl, I will confess, I had to look up. So basically, it's the pipe.
And sometimes we have to ask them to clarify because, you know, I don't want to appear not knowledgeable, but I'm not, so I have to ask for clarification.
Yes. It's always better to do that than to wing it because then, you know. But most often people usually smoke a joint or a blunt.
Mm-hmm. So the problem that we're seeing more and more is the use in the adolescents. And a quarter of them may vape, but quite a few of them use the oral products as well. Vaping in the adolescents has more than doubled over the last decade.
You know, I think we should, the way that we jinxed the marijuana episode, I think we should do an episode on vaping as well, because it is such a serious issue with so many effects. How is cannabis used across the age groups?
Well, the highest prevalence is among the 18 to 25 age group, and it's least common in the older adults. I have very few older adults that come to my office now starting to use cannabis, although I've had many in their 40s and 50s starting its use. One woman, and I remember her from years ago, she's going through a divorce, and she started smoking pot just to chill. This woman ended up using so much cannabis that she was using her rent money. Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Her rent money.
It's a very sticky, sticky addiction, like we discussed.
Very sticky addiction. But mostly the 18 to 25 have the highest rates.
And you also have people have noticed that people who are in their 60s from the hippie generation, they used a great deal of THC when they were growing up. And now it's kind of like a throwback. So it can get retried and then they can get really stuck on it. Is there a difference across genders that we've noticed?
Well, they have found that there's a greater prevalence in men than women, especially in the mid-range age. And women more so in the teenage range. Yeah, but mostly men. More men than women. Yes.
So the thought comes that do women use during pregnancy as well?
Sadly, unfortunately, and that
so sad.
It boggles my mind that you have, in their defense, some of them were using even before they realized they were pregnant. But you would think once they know they're pregnant, they would abbreviate. And fortunately, some of them do by the third trimester, but they do. There's quite a few people that are using while pregnant.
Is there a difference between races and ethnic groups too?
Well, it appears that Black and white Americans have similar rates of habituation, whereas, unfortunately, in the American Indians and Native American, they have a significantly high prevalence rate. But that includes a lot of other substances as well, alcohol and other drugs.
Yes, it's kind of similar with them.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Asian Americans have the lowest use.
I know when we discussed, and I was so amused, that people with less education or lower degree of education have higher marijuana use, and you were kind of like really skeptical.
Yeah, just a little bit, for a couple of reasons, primarily because of what I see in my office.
Huh.
It's amazing who is living next door to you who is using cannabis. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of this is so much common sense stuff, but we really need to just put it out there that it makes sense that unemployed people have higher use.
It makes sense, but it doesn't make sense at the same time. How can you afford it? You don't have any money. How are you affording
it? That's just
it?
Pandora's box. We won't go there.
No, we won't go there.
No. Mm-mm.
And also people in rural areas seem to have lower use. So that's a good thing, I guess, for that population. But yeah, it doesn't make sense to me.
So in addiction medicine, we talk about use, abuse, and dependence. So when does it become cannabis use disorder?
When it becomes problematic. And
I have a good example.
I have a woman who, she was smoking pot casually. Then she began to smoke it daily. When she came to see me for another reason, for her depression, she admitted that she was smoking it 3 times a day. And by that, I mean before she went to work, and she would leave work to come home to smoke pot. Then at the end of the day, she was smoking pot.
Talk about a sticky addiction and being stoned.
Exactly. She lived her life within that addiction.
And, you know, that just talks about the risk factors for cannabis use disorder being the frequency of use. So this lady is a prime example of that. Mm-hmm. And the more it is used, the higher the chance that it will become a problem. All common sense stuff.
All common sense stuff. And for some reason, people do not think they become habituated to it. I had a young man that he needed to apply for a job and he had to be drug tested, but they needed a sample of his hair.
Correct.
So he had to wait a long time.
Months.
And he was having some difficulty. And he said, I said, but I thought you thought there was no issue with dependency. He said, no, I'm not dependent. I just have to, you know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. They're always rationalizations.
Mm-hmm.
So the more potent also the marijuana is, again, the higher the chance for problematic use, and it is getting more and more potent mm-hmm. than it was, you know, decades ago.
Mm-hmm. And you don't even know what you're purchasing. You know, you have to trust your supplier, and so whatever they give you.
It's not regulated.
It's the same thing when we talked about the narcotics and being, you know, cut with other things. People don't know what they're buying, you know. But cannabis use disorder can also run in families, and they have found that to be the case with twin studies, by the way.
Yeah, I really like twin studies are very, very fascinating to me. So what factors increase the risk of initiating marijuana use among adolescents is primarily, you know, right up your alley and mine in terms of people who are depressed are more likely to use it, people with anxiety, people with conduct problems as children or adolescents, and people with pre-existing psychiatric disorders, where we call it dual diagnosis, mm-hmm. in which the person tries to allay their symptoms with a substance. And when there is some temporary relief, then their anxiety or their depression is aggravated, and then they go on the vicious circle or the hamster wheel again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I remember an old commercial. Oh, this will really date me. It was about someone who was using cocaine. They had them in this box. And so he was using cocaine so he could do more work, so he could do more coke, so he could do more work, so he could do more coke. And then he went faster and faster. And a lot of people, they start using this to feel better, which makes the symptoms worse, which they want to do more so they can feel better, and so on and so on. Yeah.
Yeah. And that reminds me, I have a couple patients in the methadone program, methadone maintenance program. And the degree of desperation that people go through, they're homeless, living in the back of a truck in their, and they're using fentanyl and cocaine and marijuana. And they're unemployed. And so I asked him, I always ask, I can understand the use of fentanyl because they have opioid use disorder. So I asked, why are you using cocaine? And he said exactly the same thing. He said, just to get the energy to get the work done.
Mm-hmm.
But then at night, he's going to use marijuana, which is, I use the marijuana so that I can sleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you know, the brain, so I told him, I said, you know, your brain is like a pickle jar.
Yeah.
That's really, you're just keeping on putting things in it.
Right.
And one drug's side effect is being treated with another drug.
Mm-hmm.
And the vicious circle continues.
And it continues. And the use of alcohol and tobacco and other substances is associated with greater risk of cannabis use disorder. Just like you said, one thing
right.
adds to another, and then you get into this loop.
And parental marijuana use, and sadly, when in our previous episodes, we talked about how parents can be so irresponsible that they use in front of their children, and not just smoking marijuana, but even harder drugs. But when they see that, the chance of developing cannabis use disorder rises.
Absolutely. And I'm familiar with a couple of examples of parents who admit to introducing their kids to it. At least they're using at home instead of someplace else. They smoke with their kids.
Mm-hmm. Talk about tangential thought.
Yep. Yep. So there are many reasons that people get into the need for substances, including cannabis. We talked about adverse childhood experiences, just like some of the other drugs and alcohol use.
Right.
And physical, emotional, or sexual abuse, stressful life events. You know, often people with stressful life events feel almost a reward at the end of the day, you know, to go sit and smoke a joint.
I found, on the flip side, the protective factors or factors that prevent cannabis use very interesting. To some degree, common sense, like close parental monitoring or opposition to cannabis use. So every family has a culture.
Mm-hmm.
So if the family's culture is one of, let's all get high,
mm-hmm.
then the children are likely to use cannabis. But the one that I found that was a little surprising to me was attendance at religious services. And I kind of was amused and interested that is classified as a factor.
But, you know, I can see that in our family. We're pretty, what my colleague called me, he called me once a teetotaler. We're teetotalers, you know. We attend services, we believe in worship, family worship, and all that. And I think it has helped to keep them more on the straight path. But it's whatever works for you, whatever keeps your family as a unit together, thinking the same way, you know. But maybe you can share with our listeners about some different types of cannabinoids.
Before I do, I wanted to, so that I don't forget, talk about how patients like you were describing, who's the lady that's using three times a day. I wanted to touch on the withdrawal symptoms from marijuana. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Clearing one misconception that people might have, marijuana withdrawal or marijuana intoxication does not kill people. Mm-hmm. The intoxication, of course, is such that, you know, I've spoken about this little thing in addiction medicine that people who are drunk run red lights, but people who are high on marijuana, who are stoned, stop at a green. So the intoxication can cause other effects, but the drug itself, unlike opioids, which in overdose will kill someone, marijuana in overdose will not kill anyone. And as far as the withdrawal is concerned, the withdrawal is what we call in medicine self-limited, mm-hmm. and it is mild. Mm-hmm. Basically, the patient, the appetite goes down, so all of the pounds that the person has accumulated using marijuana, they start to lose weight. They also noticed one of the other very prominent things that they notice is a problem with sleep. Mm-hmm. So they'll have some sleep difficulty and then some increase in anxiety. But other than that, the withdrawal from marijuana is pretty bland and non-dangerous.
Yeah, it's self-limiting. They'll get through it.
So as far as the different types of cannabinoids, you have the natural one from the cannabis plant that you spoke about. And then you have synthetic cannabinoids, which is really an issue. The structure of the synthetic cannabinoids is the same as the phytocannabinoids. Is not the same, sorry, but the effect is the same. And these synthetic illicit cannabinoids can be more intense, longer lasting, with life-threatening toxicity. So the earlier part about marijuana intoxication that I was talking about does not apply to synthetic cannabinoids because they are very, very intense. Mm-hmm. And in combination with amphetamines, for instance, will definitely cause psychosis. Mm-hmm. So these synthetic ones are called Spice and K2. And I've mentioned this before, but it just never leaves me about these two young guys who were at university and they were getting high potency cannabis from the web. And I would keep telling them that, you know, you will develop psychosis. And the patient always feels, or the person always feels that, oh, that's not going to happen to me. And I feel kind of like weirded out because it actually did happen to them. Mm-hmm. And then they could not handle the psychosis. And one of them actually developed actual schizophrenia with multiple hospitalizations. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't handle the auditory hallucinations or what is called voices in the head. Mm-hmm. And so they died by suicide. So it's not... The marijuana lobby is very strong and they want to promote, and we hear this all the time, well, it's legal or it's natural. And so not realizing that regardless of the two, we say, you know, alcohol is legal too, mm-hmm. but cyanide is natural.
Very natural.
Those analogies are very, very misplaced. So it is a very, very damaging drug, and particularly the synthetic one, and even the natural one now comes with such a high concentration that it's very damaging. But it has a little sister, like you talked about, mm-hmm. CBD. Mm-hmm. You want to touch on that?
Well, CBD, we know, is the second most prevalent active substance in the cannabis plant, and it can also be manufactured. But that is so... It's so prevalent in our community right now. In my office, often people will come and ask me about using CBD for their anxiety, using CBD for agitation, using CBD for sleep, using CBD for pain. And all of that are symptoms or issues for which it has been tried. But it is not something that we as physicians prescribe. There's no control. There's Also the fact that it is not regulated, that it may be contaminated with, they may think it doesn't have THC, but it can contain some of that in it. So there's so many reasons why not to dabble, but it is very prevalent right now in the community, and it is on a shelf near you.
Yeah, for sure. When patients of mine come in, particularly patients who are part of the addiction medicine practice of mine, when they turn positive for THC, I tell them that your urine drug screen is positive for THC, and they get very, I really like the how indignant they become. That's not possible. It's like, but it's here. I just used CBD, and this has happened time and again to the point that I think it's really clear, very important to understand that the marijuana lobby is very, very strong, firstly, and secondly, we have the profit motive here. So now CBD is found in any form, mm-hmm. from gummies to you name it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So the pressure to use it is so strong and it is used so commonly. So if you're a manufacturer and you are making CBD, the chance that it's going to sell well or better is when it has a higher concentration of THC.
Right.
And that's why these people are testing positive for THC. So it's not really, for the consumer to think that they're just getting CBD may not be completely accurate.
It may not be completely accurate, that's
correct. And the power is coming from the THC. And if they go for a urine drug screen for employment or wherever, they might
positive.
Show positive for THC.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but again, as we talked about earlier, you and me, we talked about people get desperate sometimes and they'll do anything to get relief, but be careful what you allow yourself to dabble in. So we talked a little bit about the interplay between cannabis and psychiatric symptoms. One can lead to the other and the other, back and forth. The basic premise is that psychiatric disorders, however, are often aggravated by the use of cannabis.
Which is so the opposite of what patients think. I'm using it for my anxiety.
Right,
I'm using it for, to help me sleep, not realizing that this is working in, the opposite direction. The interplay, or what we call in medicine bidirectional comorbidity, long tongue twister, has an issue with alcohol as well, because adults with alcohol use disorder are 6 times more likely to have cannabis use disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And people with current cannabis use disorder are 3 to 4 times more likely to have current alcohol use disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Two very legal drugs who are kind of like dancing together.
Exactly.
And this part I found very interesting. So the use of alcohol and cannabis together or within a few hours of each other result in more intense intoxication than either substance alone, which then stands to reason why people use them together.
Exactly. And it just makes sense that if you're intoxicated or if you're high, whatever else is offered, whatever else is around, you're going to dabble, you're going to use. It does make sense. And it's basically the same issue with the use of tobacco, that people who smoke are more likely to have a cannabis use disorder. And cigarette smoking is significantly associated with eventual development of cannabis use disorder. It's just, it's all related.
It's all interplayed, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And for the longest time, marijuana was looked at as a gateway drug. But in my mind, it is cigarette smoking. And I always tell
people,
don't let your children smoke cigarettes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because cigarette smoking is a very sticky addiction. And we can get people off of heroin.
Yeah,
I can get people off of alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
But smoking? OMG. And when they come in and they're using all these substances,
mm-hmm.
and then they get really, again, what I call righteous indignation. I know I need to quit smoking. And I tell them, we'll just wait on that for a minute. Let's get done with the other substance, the main substance, which is immediately life-threatening. And then we will work on that. So then they have good sobriety, months upon on end. And so then we try to work on the cigarette smoking. Oh, the success is not the same.
It's not the same.
It's very, very difficult to get them to stop smoking.
I had a gentleman I remember from years ago. I inherited him from a previous practice. He was probably in his 70s. And he said, Doc, I've been sober from alcohol for over 30 years. I said, well, how'd you do it? He said, I really got into my spiritual side and I prayed. And then one day God took away this desire from me, but he still smoked cigarettes. And one day he developed some vascular disease, and literally you could see the purple hue of his hands and feet. And he said, yeah, I have to stop smoking now. I said, oh, why didn't you ask for help with that? He said, well, I didn't want to. I wanted to still smoke, you know.
Yeah, it's smoking is so incredible. I saw a patient the other day, and he has such severe COPD that when I listen to him, I can barely hear his lungs, his breath sound. Mm-hmm. So I said that, you know, I said, how much are you smoking? He said, a pack and a half, very, you know, kind of valiantly. And I said, a pack and a half? I said, you have COPD. He said, I stopped booze. I stopped chasing women. What do you want me to do?
Can
quit
I live?
Smoking too? So he's
I've
my
heard the
only
same.
Vice.
I have heard the same.
Yes.
I have heard the same,
it's
yes.
So it's hilarious.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, the same issues, again, apply to opioids. The one aggravates the other. Yep, same thing.
And, you know, in our methadone maintenance program, like I said, they always say marijuana is legal and we have to keep centering them and focus them about how damaging it is to the young brain. Mm-hmm. When their young brain is being, you know, and how it develops psychosis. Mm-hmm. And then the same thing with alcohol, that alcohol is legal too, but should you be using it? No.
Right. Right, and
particularly with an addiction disorder.
Do you want your teacher for your child to be, you know, smoking pot before they come into the classroom? Do you want your physicians smoking pot or drinking or using anything before they come into sessions with you? No. And the same story applies for cocaine. And the more a person will dabble in cocaine, the more likely they will have a cannabis use disorder.
And, you know, common sense, it applies to sedative use mm-hmm. disorder, benzos. Mm-hmm. Xanax and Ativan, lorazepam and all, inhalant use disorder, methamphetamine use disorder. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like all, you know, bi-directional comorbidity.
Yeah.
So, that's the way it works.
Maybe you can talk just a little bit about the negatives of marijuana use then.
I know you and I are very anti-marijuana use, but the fact is that most of the issues with cannabis use disorder are because people have psychiatric problems with it and other substance use. They use that we just talked about, the interplay mm-hmm. With the cannabis. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely the gateway drug.
And in addition to the psychiatric issues, there are still other problems with cannabis use. One of the main problems that emerge with its use is accidents, motor vehicle accidents, and suicide, not small things.
Exactly. And then, like I just mentioned about, you know, suicide is young suicide in such a promising life of my two patients because of high potency cannabis is just so sad.
Yeah. They can also have cardiovascular disease. They can have problems with their pulmonary systems. It's not benign.
So in the 60 minutes after smoking cannabis, there's a high chance, and this is a very, very important thing, which I think we really need to stress on, is there's a high chance of getting a heart attack within 60 minutes of using cannabis. Mm-hmm. There was a very large study showing a significant association between frequent cannabis use and a heart attack, and a very large study of over 3 million young people showing an association with lifetime cannabis use, and listen to this, stroke. And another review, and this is huge, of medical records of 67 million people, mm-hmm. 67 million, no less, showed an association between cannabis use and arrhythmia or an irregular beating of the heart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you hear of young athletes dying,
right.
Of, you know, sudden death. And so this is something to really keep in mind. The cardiovascular effects of cannabis, I think, are even higher than the marijuana or induced psychosis.
Yeah. But, you know, it's not going to happen to me. It happens to other people,
other
but
people.
Not to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and direct toxicity, an irritant. This is something you're inhaling into your lungs. It irritates the respiratory system. You can be coughing and wheezing and have shortness of breath. And, oh, I was going to use an example, and it might identify the person, so I can't use that example. But I can say this, that I was in a situation in which every time I was around this person, there was always this hacking and coughing. And then come to find out, he was always in that spot smoking.
Right. There you go.
I mean, like literally, I thought he was dying. But that can happen as you're irritating your airway.
Yes. Yeah. And as I was researching this, so the association with cancer is not very prevalent, but it is a higher incidence with testicular cancer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you look at the age group of use.
Right.
And that's where testicular cancer is higher, too.
Young adults.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's also the hyperemesis syndrome, if you want to maybe mention
that one. Cyclic vomiting syndrome, and it's really amazing. It's well-defined. It involves episodic severe nausea, vomiting, and abdominal pain associated with heavy or chronic use, but the patient does not make the connection.
Nope.
And this part I didn't know, so I'm really anxious to present it, is it's often revealed by exposure to hot water, shower or a bath. I was like, okay. And then I'm going to talk to my patients about this. And the symptoms of cyclic vomiting syndrome resolve within 1 to 2 days of stopping of the cannabis. And I have talk about identification. I mean, it is what it is. But we have patients who have classic cyclic vomiting syndrome. But, you know, we are, as physicians, some diagnoses are what we call wastebasket diagnoses, which means that you have to do a full workup to make sure you know where it is coming from. So we did a full workup of this individual with persistent vomiting, sent them to GI, he scoped them, and then comes back and says, well, it's because of marijuana. It's the cyclic vomiting syndrome. And, you know, they're diabetic and all of those things, and with the incidence of cardiovascular disease. And you tell them that it is from your marijuana.
Yeah.
Will they quit the marijuana?
Nope.
No?
Nope. Can you just give me a pill, doc? Can you just give me a pill? But I always think of it like this. These are things that make me go, what shall we do next? Because they don't really want to hear what you have to offer. So it also affects the reproductive system, right?
Yeah, it reduces the sperm count. And this is very distressing that it's present in very high concentration in breast milk, 2 to 6 times the level in the blood. And what effect this has on the baby is unknown. Like there are a lot of things in medicine which we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. But I imagine, you know, as a parent, I would think, do I really want my baby exposed to this drug? Because they have low birth weight and all the other things that's associated, you know, premature birth, small for gestational age, meaning that the baby becomes smaller. And then often they may need neonatal intensive care. Do you want that for your child? And if you know that this is a possibility, don't you want to give your baby a chance?
Yeah, that's the thing about pregnancy, that you're not dealing with one person.
Right.
I wish they would have the responsibility to know that now we are two lives at stake.
Right.
So there's another issue with marijuana. A large study was done of 4 million members, and cannabis use disorder had a higher number of emergency department visits and hospitalizations. So across the board, I think we've illustrated all of the effects of marijuana. So before we end and go on to looking forward to our next talk, what do you think are the takeaway points from this one?
Should I quote Nancy Reagan again?
You and Nancy Reagan.
Me and Nancy Reagan. Just say no. Just say no. Don't do drugs. You know, and think about the potential complications with the chance of having a heart attack, stroke, heart rhythm problem, lung problems, increased risk of suicide, even testicular cancer. Think of all the possible issues you can have with it. Is it really worth it? And I remember there was one example of this gentleman years and years ago who, he was an athlete. This was in the news, big time news. And his first time using cocaine, he had a heart attack and he died.
Oh, geez.
First time using
first
cocaine.
First use.
First time.
Wow.
You know, so, but they can just do that Russian roulette thing. It won't be you.
So we'll discuss the psychiatric effects of marijuana in the next episode called Marijuana Madness. And I think we think you really will be, the audience will be very surprised and very, very concerned. And we hope this today's episode was really informative. I'm your host and producer, Dr. Mahjubeen Islam.
And I am your co-host, Dr. Kathleen Daniels.
And our executive producer is the very talented Chris Pfeiffer. Do share this podcast with friends and family, for it is only through education that our society can be helped and we can stem the destruction that drug use causes. Just go to wgte.org/treataddiction or wherever you stream your podcasts. And with all the challenges of life, and we know there are many, do remember patience in difficult times and gratitude always. We hope to see you soon.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.